Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Today's Thursday, March 10th. I'm Robert Mays. Great show for you guys today. We're going to preview the defensive free agents today, which I'm really looking forward to. In my opinion, it's a more interesting group than the offensive players that we talked about earlier this week, as evidenced by the fact that only one defensive player was franchised compared to like 17 offensive players. So the pool of players is pretty good. Before we do that, though, we have some news to hit. I am thrilled to welcome two of my favorite people, Shil Kapadia, Nate Tice, two guys I cannot wait to have this conversation with. Guys, how you doing?
Doing well. I'm doing well. I'm very happy Shil's here, and it's not in a sense where he's beat me over the head with going 3-0 in picks, hitting another one. We're talking about which charity we're donating to. We get to just talk about a little bit of free agency right here, so I'm very excited Shil's with us.
The stakes are a little bit lower.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right. Like, we might have to do a three-player parlay at the end or something. You know, I've got Carlton Davis going here. Yeah, there's got to be some way we can make this into a gambling show, but we'll see where the show takes us.
All right, let's start with the news of the day. The Colts have traded Carson Wentz, a move that seemed inevitable. I think Carson Wentz moving on felt inevitable. If you saw everything that Chris Ballard and Frank Reich were saying over the last couple months, what the owner was saying pretty publicly, their lack of commitment to him, even during their combine press conferences where it's easy to say nothing of note, it felt like his days were numbered. The fact that they got 2 third-round picks for him and have to eat $0 in dead money, Shil, you know, we can get into this, but I felt like this was a move that if the Colts were going to get rid of him, it was hard to do better than they did in this moment.
Yeah, it's always hard to analyze moves like this because if you zoom out, you're saying, well, shoot, that was the last year was a disaster for the Colts. You gave up picks and now you're getting rid of the guy right away. And so, you know, you can certainly look at it that way and they still have to find a quarterback. So they're not in a great spot. But yeah, usually what I like to do, and I think you framed it right, is that you have to isolate the move at this point in time, given what we know. And, you know, a month ago when I was thinking about, hey, what could they possibly get for Carson Wentz? I thought, hey, maybe, you know, there'll be a team out there who's willing to give up a fourth that could turn into a conditional third. Because every time I think about no team's going to trade for this quarterback, I'm just like, Shil, remind yourself last year, Sam Darnold, remind yourself of how desperate these teams are. And so you saw it here. I did not think they would come away with 2 third-round picks. I did not think they would come away with not having to take on any of that money, $28 million. And so, yeah, I think when you just isolate this move, I don't know anybody with realistic expectations who could say they should have got more for Carson Wentz in this instance.
Also, having $0 on the cap for him this year. I mean, if they were going to cut him, which it sounds like they were ready to cut him, if they were ready to move on, that'd be $15 million. Now you save $15 million and you get two picks. You switch second-round picks so they move up a little bit in the draft. That third could turn into a second. Barnwell, who always does the math on this for me, which is greatly appreciated, he did the Chase Stewart chart for it. And it sounds like overall, the Colts traded the 18th or 19th pick in the draft for a year of Carson Wentz. It didn't go well. Their argument about trying to being able to save him and getting more out of him than they would have than they did in Philly, that happened. On a football level, he was a better quarterback, Nate, than he was in Philadelphia. But where does that bring you, right? What does that really give you? And I think they stared that answer down near the end of last year, and that isn't even taking into consideration some of the off-field personality things that Zach Kiefer wrote about on The Athletic today. I highly encourage you guys to go check that out. It's a disaster of a move when you look at a first-round pick for what they got out of Carson Wentz, but I think it's a blessing to realize that after only 1 year to be able to recoup something rather than continuing down this road.
I think my new nickname for Wentz is he's the red paperclip. but in reverse, you know, like the trading the paperclip for something better. And then you end up with like a house. Like he's the reverse version of that. Just every year just goes, we're reversing the until you end up with a red paperclip for Carson Wentz. All you needed was a Frank Reich apology to the owner as well. I believe that he said that he actually apologized to the owner for going like, hey, sorry, I signed off on this. That was, I'll take the L on that. But like you said, in a vacuum, if you're looking at move to move, you're salvaging it. It's a recycling plant. It's figuring out, okay, we ate our loss. Yes, that's what it is. At least we got something back for it. I think that's all you can do. Like you just mentioned, the contract stuff is the best part. But going from 2 years ago, he was with the Eagles, Wentz was basically one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, if not the worst. I mean, statistical measure, how he was looking.
Him and Darnold. The salvation projects from last spring were the two worst quarterbacks in the league 2 years ago.
We're seeing the market go up for the salvage projects and the market go up for the like stars. It's like just, you know, we have two different markets that are going on right now. You got the hurt dog, the sheltered dog, and then you got the premium bred one that just went, you know, stock pedigree. But I really just think that this is all you could do. I think now it makes the Colts situation less murky in the sense that they can actually like pivot or go down a path that they want to.
I guess so. They still don't have a quarterback for the 10th year in a row.
I'd much rather than that than have to answer Carson Wentz questions and then and have to take those L's and talk about it every single day. Did you see that the Washington's Super Bowl odds went from 60-1 to 75-1 after
that's
the trade?
Incredible. That's absolutely incredible.
I think that sums it up perfectly about what Carson Wentz is right now.
I think the Colts deserve some credit for salvaging something for this. As Shiel mentioned, if you look at the entirety of the set of moves, it's a loss. Undeniable loss. I mean, they wanted a stopgap option. They had to give a first-round pick to go get one. And now they're back in the same place they've been for the last 3 years. They're figuring out who's going to play that position, how they're going to find an answer there. And that's the biggest thing about this is that even if they have all this cap space, they still don't have a quarterback now. Shiel, what do you think the best path for them is in the short term for 2022?
Jeez, yeah, it is tough. I mean, I will give them credit. Like the sunk cost thing, I do feel like NFL teams have a tough time with that so often. You know, you can just picture a team having Carson Wentz, and then they go, well, it's going to be a second year in the system, and, you know, it was a weird COVID year, or, you know, we didn't have the right piece of like that happens every spring and summer. We hear these stories. Mm-hmm. We read these stories. We take a step back and go, come on, that's nonsense. It's going to be the same thing. So I will give them credit for that. I mean, the path forward.
The ending of the year was a blessing in disguise.
Yes.
For it to crash and burn the way that they did, I truly believe it was a blessing in disguise. I've told the story a couple times on the show. I sat there in the press box with Zach Kiefer after they beat the Patriots. That was the high point of the Colts season, right? Felt like this team is going to make the playoffs. They feel dangerous. And I remember talking to him about it afterwards and saying, it just feels like eventually they're going to realize he's not good enough. There's going to be a moment where they want to get off this roller coaster and Frank Reich eventually has to be convinced this isn't going to work. This isn't going to be the outcome that we need. And then it got so bad at the end of the season that it ultimately ended up happening about 9 months before I thought it would. And I think for the long-term health of the franchise, that is a good thing, even if they had to give up a first-round pick and pay Carson Wentz last season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to answer your question about what they do next, I mean, there's no great answer. I mean, I looked at the Russell Wilson trade, and obviously he got to decide where he wanted to go. But I'm looking at teams like the Browns and the Colts going, shoot, you know, I hope you were, you know, at least making a call on that and being able to get in there. I mean, ultimately, Wilson had the no trade clause. But, you know, this year is basically buying a year, it seems like, whether that means acquiring Jimmy Garoppolo or signing Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, it's almost, you know, and Zach Kiefer had written this, like you might have to take a step back before you take a step forward. And then you just have to, like, I think right now in the NFL, you have to accumulate some assets and be ready to pounce when an opportunity arises, whether it's Kyler Murray next offseason or somebody we're not even thinking about right now. You have to take swings in the draft. I mean, to me, the draft at quarterback right now should be all about upside. Like, if you see a guy and you think, you know what, there's only like a 5% chance he's going to be the guy, you know, you still think about that over somebody who you think is a safer pick and can do everything. Because as you guys have talked about and has been a big point of discussion this offseason, it's like unless you have one of those guys who can play in that Bills-Chiefs game that we saw in the playoffs or can really lift everyone around him, it doesn't matter. I mean, the line I've been saying is that competency at quarterback has never been easier to achieve and it's never mattered less because Like, yeah. You don't look around the league and say, wow, there are like 10 teams whose quarterback situations are a complete disaster. I mean, I feel like growing up, you could say that. It's like a quarter of the league, man, mm-hmm. they have no chance. And so you could, don't spend on those competent guys and just try to take some big swings, accumulate assets, and be ready when there's an opportunity to pounce.
I look at this, and they're in such a weird spot because you want to compete because your roster is good. You're a competitive team. You know, you have holes, obviously, but they have $70 million in cap space. They could trade for Jimmy Garoppolo tomorrow and then sign two of the biggest players on the market. I know that's not their MO, but theoretically that could happen. This is still a team that was really competitive last year with Carson Wentz at quarterback, and they have the means to stay competitive. But if you give up a second-round pick for $25 million at Jimmy Garoppolo, where does that bring you? Like, what does that do for you? It's just such a strange place to be. Because they don't have a first-round pick to draft somebody. Even if they were drafting someone, you'd probably want a stopgap option, but how much should you pay for that stopgap option? There's just no good answer here. Even if they got out from under the Wentz thing, Nate, I just don't know what the right route is for them in this moment. Part of me thinks if you're trying to find the right middle ground between taking a swing and finding an immediate answer, I call the Packers about Jordan Love.
Oh, yeah. That's all.
Isn't that more encouraging than $10 million of Mitchell Trubisky or a pick and $25 million of Jimmy Garoppolo? Like, none of these things are encouraging to me. I think of those options, even if you think Garoppolo is much steadier and that keeps you competitive, is a resource in a draft where you may want to move up for a quarterback plus twice as much better than Trubisky in this moment? I really don't know. Like, all of these options are bad options, and that is where this team finds itself again.
They're almost thanking themselves that they don't have a first-round pick, so they reach for some guy. They're like, you know, like Matt Corral, like, who shouldn't be going in the first. You're like kind of almost thankful. I had three guys listed, and yeah, Jordan Love, I would say, is the one option I can maybe get beyond. If Wentz went for 2/3, what do you think the 49ers are asking for Jimmy? You know, that's so now we have to figure that market. You said a second. It might be more juice than that. Like, it might be a little bit. They're asking for a couple seconds or a second.
Well, do you have
third.
To give up your second that you, let's say the pick that you swap with Washington plus the third that you got in this deal? Would that be enough to get Jimmy? Would that be worth it?
Yeah.
Like Shiel said, that achieves your quarterback competency. You check that box. Who cares? Is kind of my response to that. Again, you can't tear it down because you've built this team and you've built this culture and you want to keep progressing forward. And it's almost the same spot that Washington is in, right? This 7-9 playoff season that they stumbled into a couple years ago has sent them onto this strange path where they spent a bunch of money in free agency last year. They go get Ryan Fitzpatrick. He gets hurt. They still have this sort of intriguing roster that they've paid a little bit for. And so you have an urgency to figure that spot out. And then that leads them, Shiel, to trade 2 third-round picks for Carson Wentz. Like, what the where? I'm not even judging the move as good or bad. What does this make the Washington football team?
Exactly. That's the question that they didn't ask themselves. I mean, they were just desperate to find anybody. I mean, I felt bad. I thought Ron Rivera was going to be moved to tears in some of these press conferences. We're calling every team. We can't find anybody. It's a tough business. You're still making a lot of money. Relax. You know, it's going to be okay. But, I mean, they were so transparent about how desperate they were. And Zach Kiefer's story said that initially the offer was a 4th and a 6th. Russell Wilson got taken off the market, and then they bumped it up to 2/3. And I would love to see Chris Ballard's face when he goes, oh, and by the way, we want to move up 5 spots in the second round. Like, that's just one of those, it's a heat check right there.
It's that Moneyball scene, right? Where they're like, how much can we get? Yes. How much can we really pry
just
from them
asking.
In this moment?
Yeah, see when they
and just hang up.
But I mean, that's the thing. If Carson Wentz were released and they signed Carson Wentz, and they're like, all right, let's take a flyer. That's one thing. That's reasonable. You need to start somebody. Go ahead and do it. But to be so desperate that you're giving up 2 of these picks and that you're paying him $28 million, it's going to get you nowhere. I mean, they're banking on the fact that they're going to be able to get more out of Carson Wentz than Frank Reich got out of him last year. I mean, talk to anybody who knows the Reich-Wentz dynamic. Like, Reich was his biggest backer from the moment the Eagles drafted him until, you know, he apologized to Jim Mercer, as Nate said. I mean, he was the guy in his corner. For him to be giving up on Wentz, and I know it's owner-driven, but still, for him to not be saying, like, no, we got to keep him, trust me on this one, That should tell you something if you're another team. And so I just don't understand why you're not more patient. If you're Washington, I understand you're bummed. There's no great option out there. I mean, you could probably sign Teddy Bridgewater or Marcus Mariota for $10 million. You're not giving up any picks. It's not exciting. I understand. But you do have to exercise some patience, see if you can hit on someone in the draft. Because like you said, this is getting them nowhere. I mean, you're counting on him staying healthy. You're counting on him not turning the football over. You're counting on him fixing his erratic accuracy, which he has not really improved on at all in four or five. I mean, all his flaws, that's one of the most troubling things about Wentz. All his flaws are flaws that are there year after year after year. Now, some of them improve here and there, but I just think they're going to resurface. So you asked the right question. Where does it get him? Like, best case scenario, 9-8? And you make the play, sneak into the playoffs next year. Like, who cares? I mean, for that fan base, maybe you do care because they've been so pathetic since Daniel Snyder got them. So maybe that is a big victory. But like, if you're zooming out and running a team, that should not be, you know, what you're making moves for.
I have some numbers to throw out here for you, Nate. Okay.
Yeah.
The Colts finished 20th in passing DVOA. Washington finished 22nd. Taylor Heinicke makes 1/10 of what Carson Wentz is going to make this year. Why is $28 million of a guy who orchestrated the 20th best passing offense in football with a guy who is his number one champion and someone we tend to think is a pretty good football coach paying 10 times as much as the guy that finished 22nd in that same metric? Why is that an appreciable difference? Why is that worth paying this price?
It's not. It feels just like such a, like, not Robin Peter, pay Paul, but like,
you're doing it just to do it.
Doing it just to do it. That's a good way. Yeah. Is Matt Ryan tradable, like, for the Colts? Like, because they could eat that contract.
I think the answer to that is yes, by the way.
Right?
Because his base salary this year is totally doable.
You can
think
do it.
Roster bonus, it's like $23 million.
If you do it post June 1st, I think it's, I think it's very doable. I was just curious about that. Like, talking with, just looking at Falcons roster, it's like, They need to rebuild with a lot of what they have going on. So it's like, maybe that's like a win-win for them to get under Alan Mack, get some more picks to work with. I don't know. That was just kind of, that's another name that I've kind of like, maybe one of these teams desperate throws a boatload at it to get Matt Ryan services for 2 years.
Or 1 year. The Colts trade for Matt Ryan. They win 10 games. They lose in the wild card round. And then Matt Ryan retires next spring. That to me is why the Jordan Love thing is just worth thinking about. If the Colts like Jordan Love, if they liked him as a prospect, if they were encouraged by what he could be, I just think that at a certain point, you need something with a future. And you don't want to overplay your hand with that. You don't want to overdraft someone in this draft. You don't want to trade back into their first round and draft a Desmond Ridder or use your second round pick on it if you don't feel comfortable with that. But I just feel like there's some middle ground where you can look to the future and make an upside play while not giving up too much. Maybe I'm overstating that, but I just think one more stopgap option. Can you imagine if they had to do this again next spring? It just feels like the worst case scenario to just keep doing this year after year. And I think a lot of these moves were justifiable in the moment. I think they overspent for Wentz. 100% they did.
Mm-hmm.
You understand how it happens, but man, like, at a certain point, you have to figure out a more than 1 year, 12-month solution to this problem.
It gives the whole franchise, like, it lets you at least know, like, what path you're going on. Because it's like, hey, we're changing. Honestly, this is how the Vikings were in the 90s. They went from, like, Warren Moon to Brad Johnson to Randall Cunningham to Jeff George. And then they finally got Culpepper. Like, that was supposed to be the future there. But it was that. It's
who's there for, like, 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 4 years as a starter, 5 years maybe. But it's just one of those that. That's the stability that you're going for. And the Vikings, that roster was so loaded, O-line, receivers, and all that. So it could be a plug-and-play quarterback situation. Now, more than ever, we know this, that you can't really do that. That's a philosophy from almost 30 years ago. So that's really another team I could think of that tried to do it successfully.
The last question that I have quarterback-wise for the Colts is calling the Vikings and saying, listen, we'll give you a mid-round pick. Will you have to eat $15 million of the $35 million? We'll give you a second round pick for it. So the Vikings save $25 million off their cap, whatever it is, and the Colts end up paying $25-ish million for Kirk Cousins. It's not an exciting answer, but like, these are the types of things that I feel like they have to think about and have to explore.
Yeah. Better than anyone they're going to get in the second round. That's I can tell you that much.
That's a tough one. I would say no, though, because you're giving up the second, and then you're going to be paying a premium for Cousins if you want to keep him beyond the season. So now you're stuck in a situation where you're going to be paying Cousins over $40 million, and that's not going to get you anywhere. So if it were less than a second, but then the Vikings, why are they incentivized to do it if they're paying that money and it's less than a second? So Cousins is an interesting one. I thought, I thought he was going to be someone that a team might get desperate for because of what you just mentioned. You can kind of talk yourself into him, but that's like a 1 year thing. And then all of a sudden you're overpaying for a quarterback who's, you know, you're in the AFC who's not going to be competing with Josh Allen and Mahomes and Herbert. And we can go through like eight more guys all of a sudden who are amazing in the AFC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Let's move on here. So like we mentioned at the top, a lot of the top defensive free agents on your list, Shiel, if you guys have not checked it out, Shiel has a list of the top 150 free agents on The Athletic. You guys should definitely go check that out. Only two defensive guys from that list no longer on that list. Jesse Bates was franchised, which makes total sense. I think a lot of people expected that. Worthwhile for a player of his caliber. He had an excellent playoffs. The safety number is totally palatable when you have the amount of cap space that the Bengals do. So totally understand that move. Harold Landry, Shiel, got a pretty sizable contract off of that career year from the Titans. They're going all in to retain most of this core. I mean, this is a team that doesn't have a ton of financial flexibility, and they're willing to pay up big time. 5 years, $87.5 million for Harold Landry.
Yeah, that's a bit, that surprised me. I mean, I definitely had him high on my initial rankings, but I did not think, you know, they just signed Bud Dupree last offseason. They've got Jeffrey Simmons, DeNico Autry.
It's a yearly thing. They got to give a ton of money to one edge guy every single spring.
I guess so. I mean, when you're trying to re-sign a guy at that stage, right before they're going to hit free agency, like you have to go above and beyond because Harold Landry has no incentive to sign that deal unless it's just like, shoot, I'm not getting this. You know, this would be the max of what I would think I would get on the open market. So that one surprised me. And yeah, it's good news, I guess, for some of these other edge rushers who are about to hit the market.
Well, the difference between Landry and a lot of the guys that are going to hit the market, I mean, the Chandler Joneses and the Von Millers, Landry's 25 years old. So there aren't that many guys in this edge market, which we'll get to, that have the sort of 3 to 4 year, maybe long-term outlook that he does. I mean, a lot of it is going to be stopgap, and maybe we can get a year or two out of this guy, Von Miller, Chandler Jones. Jadeveon Clowney, I believe, is going to be 30 this season. So a lot of those guys are in that range. So I think that's how you can talk yourself into it. Nate, the other bit of news we got yesterday, Bobby Wagner released by the Seahawks.
Yeah.
So I was working last night. I was out working because I just can't focus at home anymore because my brain is broken. And I saw that come across the timeline, and I literally out loud was like, holy shit. And people like looked at me. it elicited a reaction from me, and that elicited a reaction from people around me. It reminded me a little bit of the day I found out that Brian Urlacher got released by the Bears. Like, that is the type of player Bobby Wagner is. Bobby Wagner is a walk into the Hall of Fame sort of a guy. Somebody you covered, Shiel. I mean, he is a legend in that franchise, and justifiably so. Nate, do you feel like there's a best fit for him somewhere right now? It's like, all right, you know, maybe he's on the tail end, you know, creeping into his 30s, but if he can sign somewhere for $7 million a year, is there a spot that you feel like makes sense for him?
I want to get out in front. I love Bobby Wagner, but he did not have a good year last year.
It was not his best year.
He was a below average linebacker last year, and not just for his own standard of play, but just overall. It seemed like he lost a step. It was just weird. He's such an instinctive guy, and it seemed like he had a little bit of confusion sometimes. I don't know. It was a weird year for him. But there's got to be a team that could need a guy like that, some veteran like presence. If you have nobody, like no bodies whatsoever, like not just like nobody, we don't know what the guy is, but literally nobody on your personnel roster at the linebacker position, like that's a guy you go for. It's like, oh, we have other pieces, but we just need someone in the middle here. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I feel like at the right situation, he could be useful if you understand that he's going to be more or less average play and not all pro Bobby Wagner that we know.
How about you, Shiel? Anybody that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think he's still going to get a pretty sizable deal. I mean, I think he's still going to get over like $10 million a year you look at the linebacker class. A few teams came to mind. How about the Ravens? You know, if he's playing, they like to go after those veterans with pedigree. I mean, Wagner's durable. He's at least going to help you against the run. I know our friend Bill Barnwell tweeted out a Bill Belichick gif, I believe. That would be another one. They certainly could use a linebacker. Hightower and Juwan Bentley are both free agents. And then I think Michael Sean Dugar said something about, you know, don't be surprised if he stays in the NFC West. And I know Wagner is from L.A., has a lot of Lakers and LA pride. I mean, I don't care what the Rams cap situation ever is. Like, you know, if there's a way to do it,
it doesn't matter.
So I feel like you want to be a contending team, certainly a playoff team. Like I said, he doesn't miss games, leadership, all that. Even if he's got, you know, if you're going to be a zone heavy scheme, maybe he's someone you can still count on.
The team that I thought of initially was Dallas. They have a couple guys at that position hitting free agency. I mean, just a veteran presence. It feels like there's a lot of different ways that could happen, depending on how much cap space they end up freeing up. If they move on from DeMarcus Lawrence and Amari Cooper, they suddenly have some flexibility. So that's one team that came to mind, but I think the ones you guys mentioned make sense as well. Let's start by running through some of the top guys on your list, Shiel, and then I cobbled together some rankings in order to find like a consensus top five. In my opinion, Von Miller is kind of in a different category than this. Like, I don't know if this is real or not, but in my mind, Shiel, he's just going to land in LA or Denver. So I almost didn't consider him when thinking about what a market might look like for him as it might look for like the other top five guys here.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like those would be the most likely. It seems like he's having fun with his free agency, but
good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah, 33 years old. You know, I was looking at that J.J. Watt deal from last year. Watt got 2 years, $28 million from the Cardinals. I would think that would be kind of the floor for Von Miller, but who knows? I mean, like we just talked about with the Rams. I mean, I don't know what machinations they're going to be going through there to kind of keep all these guys. I mean, would it surprise if he got, you know, around $17 million or so? He certainly played well and got the notoriety during the Super Bowl run. But yeah, I'm sort of with you there. It feels like that those would be the two options.
J.C. Jackson, next on a lot of other people's lists. I mean, somebody that incredible turnover production, a player that, you know, some people thought might get franchised. It didn't end up happening. I think the Patriots kind of see him differently than the rest of the league might. I still feel like he's going to get a pretty big, huge deal. I mean, somewhere in like the $18 to $20 million range near the top of the cornerback market doesn't seem out of the question for somebody with his production and his history. Nate, is there a fit that makes sense for you on the J.C. Jackson front?
It's, well, usually man corners that are in their mid-20s get a lot of money.
And yeah, exactly.
And a lot of interest from a lot of teams. I actually like
Think
Dallas.
About what Trey Waynes made two off seasons ago. Or what William Jackson made last year. And William Jackson's resume does not look like J.C. Jackson's resume. Yeah.
No, it doesn't. But I was thinking maybe Dallas. Like, if I have no idea what their salary cap situation is in Dallas, but like maybe that's like a good fit if you're literally looking at a man guy, old school guy. I would really any kind of Fangio defense too. It's because when you're locked in those kind of quarters and robber schemes, you're playing man on the outside. So, you know, it would be a little bit of an adjustment. I would just always be scared of anyone coming from the Patriots way. Like, I'm just always like, how much? Because you got to think, when they run their man stuff, he's on the number two guy because they double-teamed the number one guy. So, yes, he's awesome in that role. With a team with a lot of weapons, he can take away a really good player. But sometimes he avoids maybe their number one target on passing down.
Stephon Diggs had his moments against him this year when those two guys were matched up. So, I think it's something to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Shiel, how about you?
How about the Raiders? You know, you're there. You at least know him well with who you brought in. I mean, every other Patriots right. coach and GM just signs all the Patriots players. Here, like you said, you have an actual guy who, you know, he's in his mid-20s and it plays a premium
Kyle position. Kyle Van Noy's available.
Yeah, but, and you're facing now, you know, Russ and Mahomes and Herbert six times a year. Like, you know, you better have some good corners there. I think they have some money to spend. So that was one that came to mind.
They were second on my list. I also, very similar reasoning, you know, Patrick Graham was on that Patriots staff at times when J.C. Jackson was there, right? I mean, there's a ton of familiarity there. My number one, though, is the Jets. And it's for a couple of different reasons. The Jets have a ton of cap space. The Jets have a glaring need at cornerback. Every single member of the Jets secondary is a need at this point. But the Jets played a sneaky amount of man coverage last year. Mm-hmm. Only the Dolphins played more man coverage on third down last season than the New York Jets. Wow. So you have a guy with man traits, but this Jets team played a ton of man coverage. And if they want to trend in that direction, and you know some of these teams that are more quarters heavy on early downs and are, you typically think of more zone teams, were more man heavy last year than you might anticipate. So that just fit, need, and even style of play recently, I feel like that is a marriage that could make sense.
Yeah. I totally, like you said, they just need bodies, just like with the Bobby Wagner stuff. They need guys that can run man coverage. Why not go for the top guy if we have the space for it?
The one other team that I think we should take into account when talking about corners throughout this show, I think the Chargers are going to be players for a cornerback or two. I don't know what the price range would look like if they're willing to shop at the top or they want to get two mid-tier guys, whatever that ends up being. You know, they have some moves to make. They can free up a ton of cap space with some of the moves that they have. So, and obviously they just signed Mike Williams to that deal, but I think his salary cap number this year is palatable. So just keep the Chargers in the back of your mind when you're thinking about corners over the next month or two here, both in free agency and the draft. All right. Next guy here, Marcus Williams. I mean, was franchised last year, has been very good throughout his career. No reason not to think, in my mind, Shiel, that he'll be shooting for that $17-ish million at the top of the safety market. I mean, Jamal Adams just made 17.5. He set the market. Harrison Smith is at 16, just under that. I don't see a reason why Marcus Williams' agent wouldn't sit down at every single table and say, I want the Jamal Adams contract.
Yeah, safeties and their agents probably love not only the Adams one, but specifically the Harrison Smith one. I mean, 32 years old, and he got $16 million a year just before last season. Like all these top safeties that we'll go through here, I mean, they're all saying, all right, well, that's the floor for my guy, especially when you're hitting the open market there. So yeah, I think he's definitely going to be in that $16, $17 million range. Obviously a different skill set, a free safety. I thought maybe, you know, you just mentioned the Jets for J.C. Jackson. You know, maybe he's somebody who would make sense for them. The Lions, they've got that Saints staff there with Aaron Glenn. They've got money to spend there. Another team, some of these rosters, you just pull up the depth chart and you're like, shoot, they just need players everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, he could certainly help the Lions as well.
The Jets and the Lions were my first two teams. I think that the Jets, if you look at it, their stylistically, their coverage distribution is really similar to what the Saints do. A lot of quarters on early mm-hmm. downs. And that's the nice part about Marcus Williams, right? He can play those split safety looks. He's very comfortable living in that world as more teams shift to that style of play, and a lot of man on later downs. Like that's what the Saints do. And that's what the Jets did last year. So you think about need, style, everything else, that makes sense to me. Lions with Aaron Glenn, I think makes total sense. They have space. I think the Texans are kind of an extension of that Lions thought. Not the coaching staff connection, but just need bodies and have money to spend. The other team, Nate, I'll let you do your fit here because I have one that I really like.
Okay, I'm one and done with, and that's Jets. I just said this is stability on the back end. Just the same points that we just made with J.C. Jackson, just getting guys in their DB. Also with their top, they have two picks in the top 10. It would loosen up where everyone wants them to take Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame. So maybe they can take other guys on other spots on the defense because it's a corner. Nice draft to find. Yep, corner. They can find other guys that would really help them out. So maybe the Jets.
What about the Niners?
Yeah, I like that.
Jaquaski Tartt's a free agent. If they trade Jimmy, they suddenly get some space. Again, those split safety looks, like those quarters looks on early downs. He's familiar with that world. I don't know if they can afford it, but that secondary suddenly becomes kind of nasty with Marcus Williams and Jimmy Ward and those guys back there. So that was one that was like in the back of my mind. It might be pie in the sky financially, but I could see it. I could see him in the uniform.
I'm excited for that section later when we talk about pie in the sky.
All right. Let's get to another. I mean, this is these corners, man. Carlton Davis hitting the market. I mean, it just feels like this is a situation where every time you think about free agents, it's important to ask why. Why is he hitting the market? Yep. And in this situation with Carlton Davis, Sheil, it's easy to understand, right? They only have one franchise tag. A lot of these guys were hitting the market at the same time. They don't have a ton of money to throw around. This guy's 25 years old, and he's a borderline number one corner. It seems like his money is going to be right up there with J.C. Jackson's, if I had to take a guess.
That's going to be an interesting one to see. He's had, you know, some more durability issues. I think he's missed 14
that's a good
games
point.
Over the past four seasons. And you looked at the corner market last offseason with Shaquille Griffin and William Jackson. I mean, I don't know, Nate, do you put Carlton Davis more among those guys or more among J.C. Jackson? Maybe he's somewhere in between. You know, those guys got about 13.5, so maybe he's in that $15 million a year range where it's not the top of the market, but who knows, man? Free agency's nuts. You need two teams bidding against each other, and all of a sudden a guy is making 19 or 20. But yeah, that I actually had him marked here for the Jets. I do think they're going to spend at the top of the corner market. I just thought maybe if the price is a little bit lower than J.C. Jackson for them, that he would be someone they could target.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm just repeating kind of what we said about the last two teams. My top two teams were the 49ers, similar idea. Let's get a corner for him. He's a physical presence. I love his headiness. That's why I'm really high on Carlton Davis, especially when he came back from injury last year. But the fact that I'm saying he's coming back from injury is always the thing you have to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Because he's a physical. He likes to be in your face. That's
I always
he likes
forget
to read
that.
The game. Yeah, he's 25, though. And like, these guys just never come on the market.
Exactly. Exactly.
They never do. He's the corner version of Armstead. Oh, no, not really. He's younger. So not really, but corners fall off a cliff once they hit 30. So it's, hey, we're getting him right in his prime. I don't know. He's a tone-setting type. That's why I love him with the 49ers. Just like you said, being nasty with them. And then with the Jets as well. That was my other team because they just need guys. And he would be a guy. I would almost take a chance on him more than Jackson just because that Patriots thing kind of scares me a little bit.
I have two. What about the Steelers?
Yeah.
I could see that.
The Steelers have space. They have a need at corner. I think the physicality and just that's what their defense looks like under Terrell Austin, I think is something to think about. I don't know what the answer to that's going to be. You know, they bring in Brian Flores. I feel like they're kind of undergoing a quiet evolution in what they're going to be on that side of the ball. But that was a team. And then the other one that I actually think makes sense is the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. If you think about, they play a decent amount of man coverage, but they play a ton of different stuff. I think the single high world that the Bucs lived in last year is essentially how the Cardinals like to play. So that one was another one. I have one that, if money's no object, we'll get to later that is a fit for him with me. But I don't. That's for we'll save that. Okay. All right, Tyrann Mathieu, Sheil. I feel like again getting back to the top of the safety market, even at his age, somebody is going to pay up for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like Tyrann Mathieu is the guy who every fan base, you know, probably every front office is like, let's keep this guy in mind. I mean, I just feel like he's going to have such a strong market. This is actually, I think he'll be 16, 17. I mean, he's the guy who would not surprise me if he got over 17, if the team just fell in love and said, intangibles, leadership, like we're ready to win a Super Bowl right now. We want that guy in our building. He's been very durable. Like you think about the early years and you're like, does he have injury issues? Been very durable in recent years. This is one of my favorite matches, actually. I want to hear what you guys think about this. Couldn't you just see him in that Ravens uniform? Tyrann Mathieu, Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey. They're just like, we are in your face. Snap.
After my nose.
Yeah, you're not going to have a fun day playing us. Like that might be my favorite player team match of of any free agent.
One of the reasons that I was hesitant about that is because like, oh, they have Tavon Young and like, what are they going to do with the slot? Like one of his advantages that you can play him in the slot. Well, they cut Tavon Young.
Yeah.
So they just did it today, right before we started recording. So now there's even more flexibility back there. And like Chuck Clark is a very specific role within that defense and they want to be a little bit amorphous on the back end. I do think it makes a ton of sense. Mine need a willingness to play guys in very specific roles, if you think about what they did at safety last year, is Dallas. They lose all of their safeties. Jayron Kearse is a free agent. Demonte Kazee is a free agent. They need somebody back there, and he can do a little bit of everything. I don't know. That one just, it made sense to me.
It does. I'm boring. I was like, please just sign back with Spags and just stay.
Oh, that's God. You are taking like one of the most fun, versatile players in the NFL. You can graft him onto any defense you want to. It's like, I'll send him back where he was.
Send him back. No, let's keep him in the robber position. Yeah, anyone that's creative is that's what you want to go with. It's any of those guys. Like, they can't afford him, but it's like, I wish he could go to Wink with the Giants. You know, like they can't afford him, but like, yeah, but that's the type of defense you want to see him in. And like you say with the Ravens.
Denver or Baltimore, which makes total sense.
Baltimore. Yeah, that's why the Ravens one, that's a really, really good one, because that would be so much fun with how aggressive they want to play everybody.
I also had Denver question mark. They have space. Yeah. Kareem Jackson is a free agent. They
and
also
Simmons would balance each other too.
Bryce Callahan's a free agent. So if you wanted to drop him down to the slot at certain points, like just those teams that, I don't know, they have a DB's hole, not necessarily like a safety or a corner, but just somebody that might be willing to use him in different ways. I feel like Evero, if you look at the way the Rams have moved their DBs around the last couple years, they don't keep them in one role necessarily or one spot. So those are the Denver and Dallas are the two teams that I had. All right.
I like it.
Chandler Jones. I'm fascinated by what Chandler Jones's market is going to be, because there aren't that many high level pass rushers. He's over 30. He had a really good bounce back season last year. What do you think he ultimately commands on the open market?
I think it's similar. It's kind of similar to what we said with Von Miller. I mean, the floor would probably be the J.J. Watt deal from a year ago, $14 million. Sure. I think he's going to get more than that. I think he's going to have a strong market. I mean, Shaq Barrett last offseason got $17 million. I sort of think that's what Chandler Jones is going to get. I mean, coming off a season, 10.5 sacks, 28 quarterback hits, has been very – I mean, he's – plays 15 games or more every season. And so, like you said, with Harold Landry coming off the market, I mean, if you're a contending team, you need edge rush. He's at the top of the list. The team I like for this, you know, it sort of feels like the Chiefs are just going to do the opposite of what they did last year with the O-line and just be like, let's just load up on these pass rushers, baby. I kind of like him there. You know, who knows if they get rid of Frank Clark. Now, all of a sudden, Chandler Jones, Chris Jones, maybe you add another veteran on a one-year deal. Now you have a pretty formidable pass rush. So that's the team I had marked for him.
I like it.
I had a couple. I wasn't sure what they're going to do, right? Like, I had a couple corners, but they don't really spend on corner. And I was trying to, like, throw people onto the Chiefs, and I wasn't sure who to necessarily throw on that team. All right, Nate, how about you?
Similar line of thinking of Shiel. I like him on like a 1 year, 2 year super rental for a contender. A super rental being like a premium rental. It's like your rent a car is a Mercedes Benz when you're traveling. That's what you're doing with him. I would say the Broncos. As far
they're
as
on my list as well,
good one.
Broncos. It's the new millennial DeMarcus Ware signing. You know, get that vet pass rusher type to go with one of your guys. They're all in anyways. You know, kind of that's what the Russell trade that starts. The clock starts. So all these next moves. It's like, hey, this is our window right now, or they think that's their window. The other one, the Bills. He's from the area. Like, maybe, you know, goes on part of that rotation, doesn't have to, you know, he can, like, save some miles on him as he's part of a rotation. That's another one I have. But similar line of thinking, contending team, gets to be a super rental and destroy on a rotational basis or super rotational basis.
The Broncos were on my list, and the other one's the Colts. The Colts need pass rush. The Colts have $70 million in cap space right now.
Why not?
We'll see what happens with their quarterback. They need pass rush, and I think they've been pretty open about the fact. Exactly. I just want to pair Buckner with somebody.
Somebody.
And I know they have the young guys, and we'll see how the young guys come along, but they have the money.
But like, that'll help the young guys, too, is now you need to
spend it. At a certain point, you need to spend the money.
Pull the trigger. Just hoarding it.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's get to some individual positions here. The cornerback market, some of the guys who are available near the top of your list at the position shield, Stephon Gilmore, Darius Williams, Tre'Davious Ward, Casey Hayward. I want to start with Stephon Gilmore, Shiel. Is there a best fit you have for Gilmore at this stage of his career?
I mean, I would be really cautious with Stephon Gilmore. I mean, 32 years old, and you look at what happened last year.
It's danger zone for corners.
It's danger zone. It danger the Panthers zone. Traded for him, and he played in 8 games. He played 60% of the snaps just 3 times. I mean, he was really in
weird,
and out,
right?
Not playing a lot. And so I would be really cautious. I had trouble figuring out where to place him even on the overall list, because I do think someone will look at it and say, shoot, it's Stephon Gilmore. Yeah, we're going to play some man coverage, bring him in. I almost feel like, and I don't want to just like rip the Panthers here, but I almost, you know, who knows what they're going to do? None of their moves really make a lot of sense. I almost feel like they might just overpay and be like, we traded for him. Yeah, well, you know, he didn't play a lot, but let's keep him here. And, you know, we're going to pay him $14 million a year or something nuts to play corner for us. So, I mean, I don't know. Would the Jets want to take a short flyer on him? Would the Chiefs say, all right,
if the price comes down. 1 year,
yeah.
$12 million, right. Whatever it ends up
Peterson
being, something
deal.
Like that.
Yeah.
The 1 year retread, Patrick Peterson, that's what you're doing. You're hoping that you hit it. You're like, oh my God, we got some snaps out of you. That's what you're hoping with him.
All right. So, like we did on our offensive show, we're going to hit a couple categories for each of these individual positions. Nate, who is the corner you really want? Maybe the guy who won't break the bank is going to be at the top of the market, but ultimately could be the best value at the position.
Other than Carlton Davis, I would say the guy kind of more of that upper middle class tier would be Steven Nelson. And
that's a good one.
He's not fantastic, but he's a good, solid number two. And if you're a team, a good team that looking for bodies, don't want to break the bank, we have a couple needs, but we have the money to spend it, I think that's the guy you go after. He's best. He's a physical, competitive guy. I'm sure Shiel has some notes on him. He's been paid decently before, but I just think he's a good, solid player, a good number two. It's like getting a number two pass rusher when you have a really bona fide guy on the other end. Any team that has that need, I think he's perfect for it.
$7-8 million, you know, shopping yep. in that aisle at corner, I think is teams have benefited from that. If you look at the way the Bengals built last year, those types of players,
yep.
he could end up in a place like Buffalo. Like to replace Levi Wallace, somebody like that, where it's like a reliable starter opposite your real number one corner. I think that's a really good one. Shiel, who was yours?
DJ Reed is interesting to me. It seemed like his year went under the radar in Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they switched him to different sides. And once he got settled there, I think on the right side, he ended up playing really well. Probably not going to cost you a lot. Not the biggest guy, I think 5'9", but only 26 years old. So that would be kind of a starting caliber player to maybe take a look at.
I had Rasul Douglas. I'm always wary about guys who have breakout years out of nowhere when you overpay for that. It's always scary. But I think if you look at the way he played in that scheme specifically, a lot of off coverage and that zone heavy kind of Fangio-esque defense, more teams are running that. Let's say if you can get him for $7 million and you'd have to pay $17 million for guys at the top of the market, is that a value proposition that ultimately becomes worth it? So that was one guy in the back of my head. But I think Steven Nelson would have been my other one, Nate. All right, Nate, your best under the radar corner, somebody that's not going to go for big money, but you feel like is going to help a team.
I don't know if people know this, it's kind of hard to find an under-radar corner because they're usually swooped up and not out here. But the one I have is Isaiah Oliver, and that's because he got banged up, he got hurt, he was injured. He's only 25, and actually going into this year, I thought he may ascend in this next year. AJ Terrell turned out to be an outstanding corner in his own right, but I was like, I've really liked that pairing. He's got good size, he's physical. He just got hurt. He had the IR stuff, but if you're trying to take a flyer on somebody, take a sniff at like, okay, maybe we steal a guy, maybe end up stealing a number two that plays physical, can match up. He's a competitive guy. It would be Isaiah Oliver. And that's really the name that kind of made sense for this kind of list. Cause other than that, you're scraping the barrel.
How about you, Joe?
I screwed it up. Reed was my under the radar. See what happens when we're not making gambling picks. I can't follow directions. I don't know what's going on. So yeah,
why is it not -6.5 next to him?
You can just move on. I'm looking at going, wait, now he's asking for the under the radar? I just said DJ. Okay.
So I have two. Okay.
Okay.
All Levi Wallace does is play acceptable football.
Yeah.
Like if you can sign him to a reasonable deal, and again, just have a number two corner that you don't lose sleep about.
Yeah.
Like, that is the most important thing with that spot to me. He's not exciting. He's never been exciting. I think they've been trying to replace him for like five straight years and haven't been able to. But the fact that they haven't been able to, and it's been one of the best defenses in the league over the last four or five seasons, that's just something to pay attention to for me. And my other one is, all Kawan Williams is going to do this offseason is sign a one-year, $2 million contract from somebody and be an above-average slot corner. Like, that's all he's going to do.
It's perfect. He has a role. He's like, that's what he is. He's like a side.
If you're
side
Denver, right? Bryce Callahan's hitting free agency. You need a slot cornerback. Why wouldn't you sign Kawan Williams to like a one-year, $2 million contract as you pay up for other players on your defense? Right. You do it, you never think about it again.
Right? It's like buying a starting slot. That's what he is. It's snaps.
Is it exciting to buy a Honda Accord with like 70,000 miles on it? No, but that thing is going to run really well for you, and you're not going to pay a lot for it.
And now, all right, tying it in, and now it's a passing league, so these guys are starting. It's just like gas mileage or miles per gallon is going up. How much it costs per gallon? That's what Kawan Williams is
maybe
more
it's
useful.
A hybrid. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, he's a hybrid.
Where I'm going with this?
He's an electric car. I know. We're workshopping it.
All right, your favorite fit. Just the you can just see it in your head, Shiel. The favorite fit with team and player.
You mentioned the team before, the Chargers. Why not go get Darius Williams? I mean, 2 years ago, played great under.
Oh, that's a good one.
Under Brandon Staley, yeah. He's not going to cost you what the top of the market guys are going to cost
Makes
you.
Sense.
I think he's 29 years old, and so that was one that I had put down.
How about you, Nate?
Same team, Chargers, but I have Nelson. I'm just going to kind of reiterate him. A team that needs a couple starters or a guy that can pair with Asante Samuel Jr. I know they're high on. I think we all are. Don't have to break the same exact talking points as Shiel. Don't break the bank, but you're finding a starter, and you're finding that upper middle class realm.
I had Casey Hayward to the Rams. One-year deal, start opposite Jalen Ramsey, zone-heavy scheme. You won't have to pay much. Maybe you can get him for a discount as a veteran on a championship-contending team.
My other one that I had listed was Hayward to the Colts. You know, follow Gus Bradley. They need a corner.
Listen.
You know, he played great last year.
Might as well.
If it ain't
point.
Broke,
that's actually
baby.
A really good one. Yeah. It's actually a really good one. All right. The signing you want to see, Nate, even if it's completely untethered from financial reality.
Carlton Davis to the 49ers or the Bills.
Oh, yeah.
I had Carlton Davis to the Bills.
I had
Carlton Davis to the Bills was mine.
The Bills, too. Amazing.
Oh, come on. It's got
to
happen.
Right here. If money was no object, you could just see that, couldn't you? I mean, he would fit
perfect. Oh, my God. It's perfect. It's
physical.
Perfect. Because it's a zone-heavy physical team.
Yep.
Like, it just – his style
and
of play
smart.
Matches exactly what they are.
I know.
It is so funny that we all landed on that because it's so beautiful, even if it's not possible.
I know. Even if it's not possible. Exactly. But that was my number one. I was like, man, this is fun. All right. I'm going to try and find one that's maybe more workable. I'll go 49ers. The other one I have is JC Jackson to the Chiefs.
That's a good one, too. That's
That'd
a good
fun.
One, too.
Blitz away, Spags. We're going to lock them down.
All right. Let's get to the safeties here. Guys available in this class, Quandre Diggs, Justin Reed, Marcus May, Jordan Whitehead. It is not an exciting group. There are not that many guys. After you move past the top guys, right? I mean, those top guys in the top five are worth paying top of the market money for. It falls off in a pretty big hurry. Even a guy like Marcus May is coming off a torn Achilles. I mean, there are concerns with pretty much every single one of these guys. Justin Reed played in a weird schematic situation with Houston. Jordan Whitehead has had some splashes, but he's a pretty limited player in what he provides you. I mean, everybody has a yeah, but on this list outside of the top two or three players. Shiel, who is the one guy at safety that you would want?
Well, yeah, the one guy I want, we talked about the big guys, Matthew and Marcus Williams. I mean, I think the two young guys that I would look at if you're saying, hey, we don't just need a one-year stopgap, are kind of the two you mentioned, Justin Reed and Jordan Whitehead. You know, they're both only 25 years old. You know, Whitehead has played certainly in some big games. Reed, you could probably talk yourself into him looking a little bit different maybe than he did last year in your scheme. So those were a couple that came to mind.
Nate, how about you?
This guy's a little older, but I have Quandre Diggs. And hell of a player. I think he's actually a little bit underrated because he's the steak and Jamal Adams is the sizzle. Like, you know, he actually is the guy, like, on that defensive backfield. Got hurt in the last game, which is awful. But I think if I get a 2-3-year deal, about $10 million a year, you'd be ecstatic with this guy.
If you gave him the same deal that the Bills safeties got, right? Around that $9 million a year range.
For a couple years.
And you're comparing that to what a $17 million safety looks like, I would so much rather pay half for Quandre Diggs than you're going to have to pay for the top of the market.
And maybe
guys.
Get the same value and get 100% of the value.
Yes.
Like that's yeah.
He's my exact guy. Like the only reason he's really available is because they're in this weird middle ground in Seattle. Like just a lot of the signs that point to the players I want to chase point to Quandre Diggs in this market.
Yep.
All right. Sheil, your best under the radar guy.
How about a little J-Ron curse? You know, I know he might not play every snap for you, but I love the tight end stoppers if you're going, you know, big nickel or playing three safeties. Give me a little J-Ron curse there.
So here's my thing about J-Ron curse. It's kind of similar to my Rasul Douglas concern, right? What did J-Ron curse make last year?
Was it 1.17 under two, right?
1 year, $1.1 million.
Okay.
I like J-Ron curse as a very specific defensive stopper at 1 year, $1.1 million, more than 3 years, $18 million or whatever he's going to make this year. That's the only concern about guys that were deals 1 year and then they're hitting free agency again, is that you have to recalibrate your expectations big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason he was bouncing from team to team. But I had him too as an under-radar guy. If he goes in the right fit and it makes sense, it's like, okay, why not? But like you said, it's the 1.1.2 million or whatever it was. I love that term. The tight end stopper. It's like
that's what he is.
It's getting your Patrick Beverly. Like that's what he is. Like for
great chaos.
Those
get
guys
under
are
the
great.
Skin. Yeah.
At the right price.
At the right
guys
price.
Are great.
Right.
So my guy was good. Oh, go ahead, Jane. Go ahead.
I was going to say Jaquiski Tart.
That was mine. My,
was it? Okay. Yep. That was. I like him. I like him a lot. Smart.
Super useful player. If you can get him for a few million bucks and you just have a need there, like if you're the Jets, right?
Yes.
And you just want a starter and you want to spend big money elsewhere, that's the type of guy. If you're the Eagles and you just want a starter back there, I think he's the right guy to have in mind for the right price.
Yep, and he's part of the spine, and that's important, and he's an enforcer type, and I think he'll set the tone. That's why the Jets one's pretty good too, because it's like, if you bring in three new bodies, they're going to follow Tart's lead as far as personality and everything, which is a good thing.
Sheil, did you have a favorite fit at safety?
Matthew to the Ravens is my favorite fit. The other one I thought of, Justin Reed to the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles have no safety, so they're going to need to just take a flyer probably on one of those young guys, whether it's Reed or Whitehead.
Nate, how about you?
This was Jordan Whitehead to the Cowboys. And that, it's just more of like being the box guy and that big body that they need. Basically doing what Curse is doing, but maybe a little better. You know, I think, but that was just a random fit I kind of really liked. It's kind of cool how safeties are being used now. You can really squint and see a lot of guys fitting in different defenses now.
I had Matthew to the Cowboys again because they're willing to use those guys in kind of hyper-specific ways. The signing you want to see, Sheil, even if it's untethered from financial reality.
I don't know, even know if it is untethered, but how about Quandre Diggs go back to Detroit? Patricia's not there anymore. You know, it's a new regime. he'd be a great leader. I mean, you guys said it. He seems to be a beloved teammate, can do a little bit of everything, would fit there. They have a need at safety if they lose Tracy Walker. I mean, the only concern with him is he had what looked like a pretty serious injury. It was in week 18, I think. So you have to look at that. But yeah, I thought that would be kind of funny if he goes back to Detroit.
Nate, how about you?
I have Quandre Diggs to the Ravens. So I'm tying in Shields two thoughts, and that's what I'm going with. But just be so much fun with the guys. He's versatile and just maybe even kind of be the safety net with all the craziness that his corners would like to do there if he was playing over the top of them.
I had Marcus Williams as the Jaquiski Tart replacement in San Francisco. Like I just, that one is, I love it so much. And just, you think about the way they play again, it's like a lot of quarters and early downs and like more teams living in that split safety world. Like he's a perfect player for that. I mean, he was going to be in demand last spring. I talked to a team who ultimately signed a safety near the top of the market last year, and they thought he would hit the market. They wanted to chase him. I mean, that is the type of guy they had in mind as they were rebuilding their defense. So I feel like he's going to be somebody people are after justifiably. All right, let's get to the edge, guys. Who's available? Jadeveon Clowney, Hassan Reddick, Randy Gregory, Emmanuel Ogba. Really interesting group. I mean, just a lot of different guys at different stages of their careers. It depends on what you want out of this group. So who's the guy you really want?
The guy I really want? You know, I'm wondering why Hassan Reddick hasn't had the market and whether he will have the big market this offseason. I know he's not for everybody. I know he's a little bit undersized. He's probably a little bit scheme specific, but like the numbers with him are crazy. 23 and a half sacks over the past 2 years. Here are the players with more sacks than Hassan Reddick over the last 2 years. TJ Watt, Miles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson, and Aaron Donald. That's it. Ooh,
that's a good nugget.
That's it. Mm. So I'm curious to see where he goes. If a team says, all right, you know, maybe 2 years ago you thought it was a one-year wonder, but now he's done it back-to-back years, if maybe he'll have a pretty strong market.
Nate, how about you?
I got Emmanuel Ogba, and I just think if this guy, for whatever reason, he's kind of maybe his name just isn't out there. But what he's been doing the last couple of years, he has 18 sacks for the last 2 years. He had 22 QB hits last year. That's four more than Von Miller on the same amount of snaps throughout the entire regular season. He had 11 batted passes last year. That is do shit stats. Like batted passes. He's affecting the game. So like that matters. So, oh, I'm not getting a sack. Okay. I'm still affecting the game. It's an incomplete pass. It might be about $14 million, but there's consistency to him. I think that's a guy I would take a chance on. He's going to be upper. He's going to get paid, but maybe is not as much as the top tier guys. Yeah.
You guys are going to pay $14 million to Emmanuel Ogba. I'm going to pay half that to Melvin Ingram again. We always have this conversation. He's going to be a useful guy at a reasonable price point. If it's a one-year stopgap thing, it depends on where you are in your trajectory as a franchise, but I keep coming back to him. Shil, I wanted to ask you about Clowney. Like, what do you think is the right price for Clowney? What do you think is the right landing spot for Clowney? It's hard for me to put my finger on it.
Yeah, I mean, last year, you know, he's coming off a season in which he played 8 games and had 0 sacks, and he got a 1-year, $8 million deal. So, like, you know, someone was willing to take a flyer on him. At the same time, this will be, what, his third straight year hitting free agency. And I'm sure durability, health is a big concern for some of these teams. I mean, it's really tough. I would think he at least jumps to like $12 million. You know, he had one of his best seasons.
I think at least.
At least.
I mean, if guys are going to get $15 million,
yeah,
right? If Ogba is justifiably going to get 15 and Clowney got 15 2 years ago, doesn't it stand to reason that he would get somewhere in the realm of $15 million a year this year?
More. You're right. Yeah, he very well could. It's just I'm always, when it goes from, hey, this guy was available and didn't get more. Now, again, there were circumstances for that last year. Like, you want Clowney coming off the year he had 2 years ago. Coming off this year, now you can't. Now's when, like, I bet you know, the Andrew Berrys and the Cleveland Browns of the world are going to be like, all right, let's see what the market is. We're not going to assume that he's just going to be durable and healthy and give him big money. So, yeah, he is a tough one.
We'll get to my favorite fit here in a second with that thinking in mind.
Okay.
All right, Nate, your favorite under the radar guy.
Yeah, this is my Millsap doctrine candidate, which is the
amazing
low snap guy that, you know, gets more snaps and becomes very useful. And he's a little undersized, but it's Obo Okoronkwo from the Rams. but there's a guy.
I love it.
Rotational guy on the loaded defensive front year after year. He's small. He does get banged up, but he's super bendy. He has the rare kind of bendy traits. He's just smaller. That's all it is. But if you're on a good team, you get him on a cheapie, a two-year deal, and it's not that much, you might just get more out of him. Like, I think there's more to him with more snaps, true passing down snaps. Right now, they're using him as he plays one quarter of the snaps, basically, for them on those types of downs. But a guy that maybe plays 50% of those types of snaps, he gets a bump in the stats. But yeah, that's my Millsap doctrine candidate for this show.
I had a very similar line of thinking. I had Arden Key. Put on a little bit of weight. I mean, he's was on the Chris Kocurek career rehabilitation plan, which I always love. It feels like somebody could get him as a nice rotational piece for a pretty reasonable price in this class.
Yep.
Who was yours?
23 hits last year.
Yes.
Crazy. I couldn't believe it.
Again, do shit stats. He was disruptive last year.
I mean, this is nowhere. Now, Nate had the Millsap doctrine. I don't know. This is the Rasul Douglas corollary, I guess. And that would be Charles Harris. Like, be careful. I did not realize Charles Harris. I'll be honest. I was not grinding the Lions film last year. 7.5 sacks, 16 quarterback hits, played 76% of the snaps after he got paid, what, under $2 million last year? I mean, I don't know. Is someone going to say, well, all right, first round pick, finally realizing his potential, or is he kind of a one-year deal guy? But he certainly was productive, so I'm kind of curious just to see what his market is like.
All right, favorite fit, Nate?
And Arden Key to the Chargers would be very interesting to me.
And nice.
I love – he got unlocked. He was useful with the Raiders, but, I mean, like you said, he got a nice little boost last year. But why he got unlocked was lining him up inside and being able to run, line up across the front. And now with defense coaches being willing to move these guys around on passing downs when they're not blitzing and just going like, that's how we're going to create chaos up front. He's a very, very useful. That's very useful to be able to go, I'm going to line up at nose on third down. And like all of a sudden the next snap, base downs, I'm outside. It gets more speed on the field for you. So I would love that with the Chargers. And like him and Joey Bosa would just wreck shit. That would be a lot of fun.
I had Chandler Jones to the Chiefs, the one I already mentioned. So, yep.
I had Melvin Ingram in the 1 year, $8 million opposite Myles Garrett role.
Nice.
In Cleveland.
I like
it. If they just want to keep cycling guys in there, I think that's exactly the type of guy that you should shoot for in that role. I did not have one of these. I'm curious about your guys's. The signing that you would want to see Shiel, even if untethered from reality.
Well, I've got one. How about maybe this might be tethered to reality. How about Jadeveon Clowney goes to the Chargers and opposite Joey Bosa? That would be fun.
I love that because his perfect role is as a super number two.
Yeah.
That is his perfect role. And there are only so few places where he could be that. And the Chargers is exactly that. Even if you pay him $18 million, he's still your number two edge rusher in that situation.
Just pay him for 1 year. So he can sign for the next team next year. So for mine, I got Justin Houston to the Bills as a little 1 year, same thing.
That was very reasonable. That makes perfect sense.
That's tethered.
My not reasonable is Von Miller to the 49ers, just for fun. I just want to see it.
They still have Ekwobom, right? He did not sign a one-year deal, so he'll still be there. I was going to say, being able to play Armstead inside is truly important. So, yes. You lose Key from that rotation. We'll talk about another guy that you lose from that rotation as we get to the defense tackles here. But where they look at edges, and if they do, I think is interesting. All right, last position here because Shields got to get out of here. We're just going to do the defensive tackles. Who's available? We've got Akeem Hicks, Larry Ogunjobi, DJ Jones, Bilal Nichols. Shield, the guy you really want from this defensive tackle group.
I'm deciding which one of your favorites to steal here because I know, I'm pretty sure I know.
There's so many.
I'm gonna take Nate's, I think. How about a DJ Jones? With all these teams playing, with more teams playing too, it's interesting. When I first started doing the free agency rankings a few years ago, the nose tackles, I'm like, get out of here. You're not playing on third down. No one's paying you any money. And now teams are going too high. And like these nose tackles are getting 10, 11. DJ Reader got $13 million a year from the Bengals. And so DJ Jones was a free agent last offseason. Got to be teams kicking themselves for not signing him then. I think got $3.5 million to return to the Niners. Had a fantastic year. I think he's going to get a big deal this year.
That's a really good one. Nate, what's yours?
It's DJ Jones. I mean, come on. I got so many notes on this too. He had 10 TFLs last year, same as Jonathan Allen, Ed Oliver, DeForest Buckner. He had 48 tackles on run plays, same as Jonathan Allen. More than Javon Hargrave, more than Greg Gaines, but Jones did on 200 fewer snaps. He's entering the prime of his career. The downside is he's only had 2 sacks, but he is useful on passing downs, just more of like a eat the center and let other guys work around him a little bit. But that's my guy too. I think he's going to be super useful for somebody. I love his play style. He can have moments when he goes against below average or poor guards. He can dominate, like actually dominate, which is what you want, like when you're paying for that position.
He's a great one, but my answer is Sebastian Joseph Day.
Knew it. That was the other. Yeah.
Even if the price is like $7 or $8 million a year, and what he does and what he can do for you in the modern NFL with the way that teams are playing is so, so important. And I think you could spin in your head if anybody can do that, anybody can eat blocks. Not anybody can eat blocks like that. He really, look at the Chargers. The Chargers are proof that not anybody can do that. And I think that just singular skill that he has, I want that. I want that as part of the larger plan that I have on defense with the way that teams are playing right now. And he can give you that. That's why him to the Chargers is my favorite fit. Like it makes total sense in my mind.
I had that down as my fit as well.
Nate, what was your favorite fit?
Favorite fit? I was getting ready for something else. My favorite fit would be Sebastian Joseph Day and the Chargers because, I mean, every part of this makes sense. And then my other one was, I'm going to butcher his name, but Foley Fatukasi.
From the Jets.
With the Browns. And just need some meat in the middle. Just eat it. Just eat it. That's what he would do for them and just help everybody else out up front.
All right. So the signing that I would want to see, even if on the tethered from reality, because we got to get out of here, speaking of the Browns, is Akeem Hicks to the Browns. You drop him on that defensive line with Myles Garrett and however else they fill that out, I would absolutely love that.
I had Akeem Hicks as well, but I had two other teams listed. The Chiefs. How about Akeem Hicks next to Chris Jones?
I also thought about that next to Chris Jones. Yep.
Thoughts and prayers to every center and guard in the NFL. and then the other one is the same idea. Rams. I mean, Akeem Hicks and Aaron Donald. Akeem Hicks just plays with such like violence. And when he's healthy, man, next to Aaron Donald, that would be fun.
Nate, what do you got for me? What's your last one?
Well, this is like under the radar, so I don't know if it's also the sign I want to see it, but I would want to see B.J. Hill with the Chargers. And that's because I wanted to talk about B.J. Hill, and I didn't realize how a good, solid player he was. I want to give him more credit. If they go down the Jordan Davis aisle in the draft, and they want to, like, because I think Jordan Davis just ran away in 4.8 40 away from that pick that they had, the 17th pick, and they want to shop in that aisle, I'd like him with the Browns as well, just that body type. I do want to say one under the radar guy for linebackers, because I know we're not going to talk about him. But that's Nicholas Morrow from the Raiders. He got hurt last year, missed the entire year. He had a breakout 2020. It was kind of unheralded because their defense was so bad. But I think if someone taking a chance at linebacker wants to get some guy that they can get under market price, it's him. So I just want to throw that one in there.
All right. We didn't get to linebackers, but we did get most of this in under the wire, and I'm pretty proud of us. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you both of you guys for your time. We will be back tomorrow with Bill Barnwell, talking about some lessons that we can learn from the last couple of years of free agency. In the meantime, please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. I sincerely appreciate that. Please subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/football show. This is a great time to do it. You can read all about the Carson Wentz trade. You can read Shield's top 150 free agent list. So much great stuff to get to. Everything that we wrote about the Russell Wilson trade. Stephen Holder wrote a piece today about how the gap between the haves and the have-nots quarterback-wise feels as wide as ever because of how important the position is and how that's dictating decision-making throughout the league. Highly encourage you guys to go check that out. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, appreciate you guys listening. Talk to you soon.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.